which we all have to play. And as a result, there's an application for every age group. And the book of Proverbs talks to us along those lines about the different roles that we play and the admonitions. Of course, Solomon in his book, as he's writing it, the first six chapters, he reiterates over and over again, my son, emphasizing it. And in particular, my son is mentioned, I think it's listed as, maybe getting my numbers mixed up. It's either 24 times or 42 times. So whether I'm dyslexic on the numbers there, my memory, or I don't remember. But it's over and over again where he's admonishing his child, whether it's specifically his child or his people. The admonition is given there to a younger person that needs to learn from that lesson. The command for children to obey their parents is directed at children, but it necessitates parents teach and train their children. Therefore, it's a shared responsibility. It's something that goes hand in hand. It's a shared role by both the child and having to listen and pay attention. It is a dedicated role by the parents that they are commanded to teach and to train up their children in the way that they should go. It initially occurs between two parties, completely different experiences. I would say that if we were to ask the most senior person in this auditorium here, the span of their life experiences, they would be much different than the youngest person in this auditorium, because the youngest person has not lived through the same experiences. Those people who were, my parents' generation, having lived through the Great Depression, much different experiences than myself, who's never had to feel that adversity. And even when we're training a child, we have to recognize that at a level of patience and mercy to some degree as we're teaching them, they're not going to come at a problem the same way that we will, because they just don't have the skills yet to do it. And that's hard when you're trying to get a point across and they just don't get it. And sometimes it's a communication issue as to how they view it and finding that way to communicate to them on the same scale. We have a generation now that is very different in how they communicate and learn. Today's generation of teens, preteens, young adults, say in their early 20s, have grown up in a digital generation. Everything is digital. We don't write anything down. We need to communicate instantly, meaning that I'm going to send you a text message and I expect you to respond to me in the next 30 minutes, or you hate me, or you're ignoring me. Whereas an older generation might have put a letter in the mail and you expect a response back maybe in the next 2 weeks. And it's a very different time-sensitive behavior as to how we review the communication and how it's interacting and our expectations of each other. So as we look at this, we have different experience levels and knowledge levels. The things that have shaped our parents' view of the world have not yet been experienced by the children. And some of those very hard lessons that they may have lived through. This requires patience and understanding on both parties. The command for children to obey their parents is directed to the children, but it necessitates that the parents teach and train their children. Therefore, it's a shared... I just read that over again. Sorry. The relationship changes as children gain independence and their own families. Often a greater level of mutual respect develops as one gets older. But this is driven by God's command in Genesis to children to leave and cleave once they become married and start their own family unit. And that is an interesting dynamic in and of itself. A parent has been telling a child all along what you have to do, and then when they're told to leave and cleave, do you keep doing that? You need to brush your teeth this morning. No, that's not the same thing that you can keep doing. But it is a transition that everyone has to make. Ultimately, it becomes one where the roles can shift as parents stubbornly relinquish independence and their children try to respectfully work as caregivers. And I use that word stubbornly. We are all individually fiercely independent. whatever age we are, we think we can be self-sufficient. And it's hard for us in some cases to turn around and ask for help, regardless of the age. But as our parents age, and I speak from this with experience, my dad was stubborn to give up certain things, particularly climbing on ladders. It's the level of independence that they've been able to be self-sufficient for so many years and unwilling to relinquish any part of that. And then the child recognizing the importance of respecting that independence and caring for it carefully. So this spans all generations. So when we talk about children obeying your parents, it doesn't stop at teenager. It doesn't stop as a young adult. It doesn't stop as an older child caring for parents. But the role of that changes, particularly when, if a parent becomes infirm in a way that they can no longer make mental decisions for themselves, the roles are completely reversed. Now the caregiver is the parent in many cases. The Riddle of the Sphinx paints a picture of this transition. And if you're not familiar with the Riddle of the Sphinx, it has its lore in Grecian mythology and so on, but the story goes, which creature has one voice and yet becomes four-footed, two-footed, and three-footed? And the Greek person that was credited for solving this is called Oedipus, and he, of course, the point there is that Oedipus credited with the lore is solving this. It says, man who crawls on all fours as a baby, then walks on 2 feet as an adult, then uses a stick in old age. It is a life transition. And I want to paint that picture for us because it really colors how we study this topic of children obeying their parents. Effective communication and discipline approaches logically change since we have change over time. The standard by which we are judged, however, does not. What is the standard by which we are judged? God's Word. Okay? And that's important. You know, that foundation shared by both the parent and the child or the grandparent, whatever age it may be, common is that we're working toward the same goal, ultimately a home in heaven, and the soul of each person involved is the guiding principle. So how? How do we teach children to obey their parents? Well, we teach them to listen to their parents. We instruct them to listen, respect, and we teach them discipline. The passage talks about not sparing the rod and spoiling the child. Discipline is a command as it relates to a parent. Proverbs 1:8-9, my child, listen when your father corrects you. Don't neglect your mother's instruction. What you learn from them will crown you with grace and be a chain of honor upon your neck. There's not an ugly thing presented in that passage, is it? Everything there that's presented is desirable. And it all goes back to, my child, listen when your father corrects. Don't neglect your mother's instruction. So the first thing, it's teaching a child to listen, and it's teaching them to respect what they hear. In Proverbs 4:1-4, hear, O sons, a father's instruction. And this is obviously Solomon talking to his children or his people. Hear, O my sons, my father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Now that's interesting in and of its insight there. Solomon's giving what he was taught. So he's giving us insight into what David did with respect to him. He said, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. How did David's other sons turn out? I mean, if we look at the history of all of David's sons, it's a checkered past, even with one all rising up in insurrection against him. Solomon was chosen because of how he learned to respect his father and respect God and to lead a nation. Listen to your parents. Again, hear my son and be wise and direct your heart in the way. Be among be not among drunkards or among gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and slumber will clothe them with rags. Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she is old. We'll get to a quote by Mark Twain later on. But it is definite, because we don't experience the same life events, and we're at different ages. Oftentimes a young person will say, you just don't know. You're not in touch with what's going on today. That's just wrong. Or, I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see anything wrong with that. And you'll hear that over and over again. And yet, as you try to teach them, it may not get through until they finally have that life experience that says, oh, I get it now. Parents must develop, demand, and enforce respect. And households where that's absent, it's not going to be able to teach and train. It's not going to sink in the same way. And a parent can try to teach that, and in some cases it will take those life experiences for the child to see, wow, I can respect my parents because they actually are smart. Or, well, they actually have gone through things that are of value that I can learn from. Prior to teen years is important because it sets the stage for how an adolescent and a child will most likely be set. It's kind of like, I do an analogy of a clay pot. You can mold and form a clay pot while it's still kind of wet and moist, but when it starts to harden and get it and dry out, if you massage it too much, it's going to fall apart. And then certainly after it's been fully baked, what can you do with it? Not much. It's not going to change its shape much. Proverbs 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. Today's society does not completely discourage discipline, but it discourages it in a similar way to how the Bible talks about it here. Here they talk about a rod and reproof, corporal punishment as a way to teach and train a child that something is wrong, even when they can't experience it and realize it themselves. Today's society will soft pedal the vast majority of that. However, I will say this, there are effective ways that don't always require, and different children will respond in different ways. And ultimately, it's going to be a parent figuring out which way their child responds to that instruction. You can look at certain children and they'll just fall apart. You can put them in time out and it'll be more effective than anything else. Some kids you can beat all day long and it won't matter. And I use that lightly. You can correct them, you can spank them, you can do it, but they just won't get it. They'll stomp their foot and look at you like, that didn't hurt. So, each parent's going to have to find their way. Listen to your parents again. How? Teaching a child to listen is as important as other instructions provided. Mark Twain said, at age 14, I was appalled at my father's ignorance. But at 21, I was amazed at how much the old man had learned in just 7 years. And it's so true. Young people, because of the absence of the experiences and because their view of the world is what they see directly around them, I am so smart. I know how to handle all the things around me. What they don't know are all the things that are outside them that are affecting them that they need the experiences and the skills to be able to deal with. It's the things that they can't see yet that we, having been older, as a parent, try to teach them and instill in them. Proverbs 15:5, a fool despises his father's instruction, but he that regards reproof is prudent. How do we teach, Melvin? Well, and candidly, I have today I have a child in the audience. I've been having two children in the audience, and I know that can be awkward for them. You know, this me standing here teaching may seem like I'm just preaching to them. You know, the life experience is passed on over and over, greatly appreciated. How do we teach a child to obey their parents? In Proverbs 6 and 20 and 22, my son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always. Now, this is an admonition to the child. It's binding it. So what do you do when you bind something? You attach it in a way that it's secure and it's not going to go away. You keep it close to you. That's also an idea of binding it. You know, when somebody has a broken limb, they bind it up and secure it so it doesn't move and it protects it. Here, you're binding this teaching into your heart in a way that it won't get away from you. Tie them around your neck. When you walk, they will lead you. When you lie down, they will watch over you. And when you awake, they will talk with you. Some of the things that we're saying right now, for example, as we talk about some of the things as we talk about right now, where these admonitions, they'll talk with us. Just as Melvin made the point just a while ago, we carry those lessons with us. We learn from them. We apply them to our lives. They become the background conscious, so to speak. When we're about to try to do something, would that parent approve? The wording is almost identical to this passage. I think Solomon took that passage and put it in his terms here to convey that idea to them. It's, I guess, the point that I was trying to make here. Just as Melvin said about here's parents teaching different ones, the words come back from the grave, so to speak, to give us guidance and to help us think through those things. They become part of our internal being. They become a lens with which we view the world and help to tint it in a way that we help see things better or more clearly. And Colossians 3 and 20 makes the point, children, obey your parents in everything. For this pleases the Lord. No, it does not say when you feel like it or when you get around to it. There is one exception, and we'll talk about this as we go forward. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, as is mentioned in Ephesians. Proverbs 19, 26, and 27. Children who mistreat their father or chase away their mother are an embarrassment and a public disgrace. If you stop listening to instruction, my child, you will turn your back on knowledge. Solomon wrote this for his people very early on. We see Jesus making the point to the Jews in his day, where when they made their, they basically were turning their backs on their parents, and by giving a sense of color of money, so to speak, they dedicated what they had put aside to care for their parents and devoted it to the temple, and then said, well, I can't care for you anymore. I've given it to the Lord. Well, that doesn't work in today's business or in today's government when you make color of money and don't put it where it's supposed to be. And it certainly doesn't work in one handling one's responsibility with respect to in the days of the Jews and handling their responsibility to their parents because they said, I gave it to God. Well, what did God want? What's God made his point over and over? He would rather there be obedience. God commanded them to take care of their parents. Not give your money to me in service and sacrifice. It's a sad thing here as it relates to this about a child mistreating a father or mother. And certainly as it relates to, as we go further into this lesson, discussions about how a child takes care of an aging parent. Parents in the past, I know that my father taught me, having seen individuals that were taken advantage of by their children, there's a certain reluctance as it relates to financial matters for a parent to relinquish that control to a child. And for this very reason, someone trying to take advantage of that. Obey your parents. In Romans 1, 30 through 32, and since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, gave them up to a debased mind. And he makes the point on down through here, in all of this category of evil things, they wouldn't obey their parents. It's grouped in there with murderers, foolish, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil. And in the same listing, those that wouldn't obey their parents. What was the punishment under the old law for a child that would not obey its parents? It was death. I'd be dead if I was still under the old law. I'm thankful that that changed. And that, as it goes to the idea of, as we go forward with children, being merciful to our children, relates to that. Obeying their parents, there's only one exception, and that is within the Lord. You know, if something is commanded to a child that's outside of what God's commands allow, that child is not obligated to do it. Same way with a wife to a husband in relationship, those apply. God's commands come first. We ought to obey God rather than men, and that's Acts 29. Colossians 3, 5 through 9, if obedience to a parent requires sins, we are not bound. This requires courage on the part of a child. It also necessitates respectful disobedience. It's going to be take a lot of courage on a child's part to stand up to a parent as they're telling them, I don't want you to go to worship services. And some cases can happen if there's an unbelieving parent and a believing child. How do we instill a desire for obeying, teaching obedience? Bring joy and gladness to your parents. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Having a child see that obedience brings joy. And that goes into the balance of both providing positive discipline and negative discipline. A child needs to see that we are pleased with them, not that we're always unhappy with them. Proverbs, otherwise they get the sense that I can't do anything right. Proverbs 15 and 20. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. Proverbs 17 and 6. Grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and the glory of the children is their father's. Proverbs 17 and 21. He who sires a fool gets himself sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. Proverbs 17 and 25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. It's a balancing act there. There's some positives and some negatives. An example of one that it shows, Proverbs 17 and 25, if we look at the story of Esau, we see a foolish son who chose wives of the Canaanites that distressed his mother beyond belief and did not want her other son, Jacob, to take a wife from the same region. Proverbs 19 and 13, a foolish son is ruin to his father. Be a wise son and walk not with the sinners. Proverbs 1, 10 through 15, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not, walk not the way with them, refrain thy foot from their path. And that's reiterated again in Proverbs 3 and 1, 21, don't forget God's law, but follow his sound wisdom, as a paraphrase. Paraphrased again, Proverbs 4 and 10. God's words are life to all who follow. Over and over again, Proverbs reiterates sound advice to both the child and the parent. There are more passages here related to the instruction between the two and admonitions to the two than probably any one other place in the Bible. Proverbs 7 and 1 through 4, make God's law the apple of your eye. Meaning the thing that you're focused on, that you enjoy looking at. Proverbs 24:12-14, that should say learn. Learn to obey parental, civil, and spiritual law, and you will be blessed. Tough lesson for a child, or one that's being taught, is accept chastening and rebuke as an act of love, not as a point of pain. Proverbs 3:11-12, chastening from God or parents comes from true love. What did God do to His people to try to get them to obey Him? He chastened them. He sent plagues. He sent death. He sent other nations against them. Why did He do it? Because He loved them. Proverbs 17:10, be wise and obey the reproof. Proverbs 29:17, correct thy son and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Now, assuming that, you know, that's in general. There will be some children that no amount, as we said, no amount of discipline to them may actually get them to turn the tide. This was the first commandment with a promise, as it's made to, and the point of it is that it may be well with thee. Proverbs 6:4, bring up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Proverbs 3:13-18, wisdom imparted is like a tree of life, making the child's future one of success. That's a positive one, is it not? Making the point over there that wisdom imparted is like a tree of life, and it's going to lead to success. It provides communication skills. It provides social skills. It provides common sense. All of these are things that are imparted by the instruction of a parent to a child. Honor father and mother as it relates to the first commandment with promise. Treat it as a thing of value. Child, it's hard for them to see their parents as a thing of value in some cases. And unfortunately, it feels like the parent, as they're raising that small child through the teenage years, that they're never going to value me one way or the other. As a parent, this too shall pass. There will be a time when it changes. That's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel, and keep going for it. Mark 7:9-13, honoring involves caring for aged parents, and this is what we referred to earlier as Jesus' admonition to the Jews and what they had forsaken. With a child maturing, should come appreciation for their parents. Thanksgiving and appreciation can be slow to come. What did it take for the prodigal son? It took absolutely being debased, down to the point that he finds himself wanting to eat the husks that the swine were eating. Why was that so bad for a Jew? Swine were unclean. Not to mention that he's wallowing in filth. What did it take for Esau regarding his wives? Esau finally did realize to see how much pain it was causing his mother that he had taken these Canaanite wives, that he went and chose better wives. I'm not saying go pick better wives. I'm just saying that was the example of what Esau did. And you see the change in his attitude. We also see Esau, having stayed there in the region with his parents, actually was the caregiver to his aging parents. The elimination of selfishness is part of the growth as it's related to a child and maturing. A young person, their view of the world surrounds them and only really what involves them. It's what I want. It's not what is appropriate for the collective, whether it's collective family or a collective group. Proverbs 31:24. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. there will eventually come a time when a child realizes that they actually did have parents that cared for them. Not all children are that way. Some will realize that from day one, and some will come to that conclusion much later in life. Conclusion. Parents have a responsibility to train their children. I think we've established that as it relates to talking here about teaching a child how to obey. They don't know how to obey from day one. It's going to be something that we have to teach them. Children have an obligation to listen and obey. And that's unconditionally, all the way up to commands that are outside of the law of God or contrary to the law of God. Both parties are to do so with respect and love. And that's a definite balancing act. I know I've shared a lot of personal stories. I have a good one for you. This tells immaturity on my part and then also behavior of a parent. Many years, my dad had sold a pickup truck. He'd always had a pickup truck. Really wanted a pickup truck again, even though he couldn't drive it. So he went online in the paper and happened to see, oh, there's a truck for sale for $2,000. I'll call him and buy it. He called him and bought it. Didn't consult anybody, didn't talk to any of the rest of the family, so on. Find out about it. Go to my dad and said, Dad, you'd have told me I was foolish if I did that. Because you bought that sight unseen. You don't know whether that thing has four wheels on it or anything. He didn't take that well. I could have handled that better. But sometimes it takes a shock effect to kind of get the point across. We get that truck home. It has to have a new engine. It's had water damage like it's been in flood. And eventually, several years later, you know, I didn't need that truck. Those are tough conversations to have to deal with. And I didn't handle that one the best one out of respect, but I did try to do it out of love and to get the point across, because setting the stage there, I don't need you making these decisions completely in a black hole as you go forward in your life. And I'm sure in this audience that there's a lot of other wealth of experience that can be shared on interactions between parents and children and so on. And the only way that that wealth of knowledge ever gets shared is if we actually communicate it between one another. Thoughts and comments on today's lesson? Absolutely. I think that in many cases, as we study the life of David, David suffered from, to some degree, decision paralysis after his sin with Bathsheba. Any other comments? That. That is very true. You don't know what somebody else is going through until you've almost walked in their shoes, and you don't know unless you talk to them and kind of hear some of those things out. And it is so encouraging in those cases where you see these young people that are making decisions to do what's right in spite of the high cost that they're paying for. Other comments? Brent? Oh, I agree with you completely. It's a whole lot easier not to have to learn from experience. I agree with you completely. And the teaching and the writing, the whole series as it relates to you know, becoming a Christian is teaching us to learn from what other people have gone through. If we go to 1 Timothy, you know, or excuse me, Timothy, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. It's written down just to teach so that you don't have to experience it, so that you see what the Israelites went through and how God admonished them. But that is so important. I will, you know, my comment there about some people only learn from it after they experience it, it does seem like there are people that's the only way they learn, unfortunately. Oh. Well, children are sponges. They're going to absorb whatever they're exposed to, whether it's good or whether it's evil. Just like oftentimes a child that's, you know, exposed to foul language by his peers, he's going to pick that up too, unless he's taught otherwise or disciplined for doing it. Thank you for your comments. Oh, yeah. Thank you for your comments, Brent.